This episode is brought to you by Fat Expats. It's the new expat magazine that's coming your way next month. If you'd like to find out more about it, head over to twofatexpats.com. You'll see a pop-up and you can sign up and we'll shoot you some information. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Kirsty Rice. But we're in our online sparkling school exam week. It's been tough, but it's only Tuesday morning. But we don't have anything as exciting in our house this week as you do.
Oh, well, I'll talk to you about that later in my three favourite things. But online sparkling schooling, what's the sparkling bit?
Right. So when online schooling came out, people were calling it homeschooling.
Oh.
And it's apparently homeschooling is a bit like champagne. You don't call it homeschooling if it's not the real thing and the original thing.
Oh, good Lord.
So,
yeah. Oh, please. Oh, this is going to do my head in, isn't it?
It is, but it's just like it's just online sparkling schooling. So, I have a friend here who has five kids and she homeschools. And the way she does it, she said, "I could not do what you guys are doing. It's crazy what the school is asking you to do or what the kids have to do." So, the way she does her homeschooling is totally different. So, homeschooling is a totally different kind of vibe. It's a kind of different setup. It's a kind of different everything. So anyway.
So where does the sparkling come from?
Well, it's like you can't call champagne. You can't call something that's not from the champagne region champagne.
Yes.
You have to call it sparkling wine.
Oh.
So because you're doing schooling at home, you don't call it homeschool. You call it online sparkling school.
Can you tell me, Nikki, who came up with this term online sparkling school?
Oh, I have no idea. Someone on the internet somewhere far away. I mean, I've just seen it for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I've never actually used the term, but I just thought for this week, particularly for exams, it's a little bit better.
No, you always have to mention these things, Nikki Moffat, because I don't read these things and I don't see them. So I need you to tell me about these things so I can go, really? That's what they're calling it?
Exactly. And you don't have to worry about it because your kids are back at school.
Well, three out of four of them are. I have one who now is, of course, on summer break, and he is on summer break until the end of August. But I have had an email from the school in Qatar telling me that they imagine that it will still be online schooling when he returns. I think the term they used was highly likely that it will still be online schooling. I know there's a feeling in the Middle East that school will not return on campus until 2021. I'm not sure whether that is the case or not, but, yeah. And for us, you know, it's all pie in the sky sort of stuff anyway, because my husband will obviously be here having treatment for cancer, and so he's still doing chemo and radio and whatever when school goes back. So that actually may work in our favour. We'll have to wait and see. Anyway, Nikki, we digress. Let's go on with our four fat expat questions. Nikki, tell me, what do you look for in a cost of living comparison website? Sort of what are some of the best ones? And I'll answer my own question by saying I only know of numbeo.com. I don't know of any others. And I've lived in the same place for 10 years. So, but I think maybe you will have the answers to my question.
Oh, not necessarily, but I do know Numbeo. We have always used Numbeo. But what do you look for in a cost of living comparison? Rays of hope. Glimmers of sunshine. Anything that says a restaurant meal costs less where you're moving than where you are. Really pay attention to the value of alcohol where you're going. HR divisions and companies use a particular website that they pay a lot of money for. And we've always found that Numbeo comes in relatively close.
Right.
So that's like if we've said, oh, it looks like there's a 15% cost differential in standard of living, cost of living, they'll say, yeah, that's what we get to. So I've found that Numbeo is fairly good on that point of view. I saw it was discussed recently in the Facebook group and someone said there's expatistan.com, which I thought was weird. But I went and had a look at it. It seemed pretty like a real site and relevant. And the person using it said that she found it better in terms of the rental amounts. But she was comparing the rents in Hong Kong. And I think the thing with places, which websites can never do for you, because they take it in a point in time and they take it at another point in time. And, I mean, in places like Hong Kong, the rent can change absolutely astronomically in areas where expats will live, because Numbeo.com, of course, does a standard cost of living. And so, you know, that averages out pretty much over the whole city. So, you know, there are, if there's a particular school you have to go to and you want to live in relative to that, if there's a particular area you or your spouse is going to be working and you want to live particular to that, rentals will always be different in different parts of the city. And you're probably not going to live necessarily in the most expensive part or in the cheapest part. So you're going to be somewhere in between. So there'd be some sort of differential on the housing expectation. But for example, in Hong Kong, we moved into an apartment and signed a rental contract. And we had these lovely neighbours. And 3 years after we lived there, we signed a second rental contract, which was sort of 10% more than our first one. And our lovely neighbours moved out not long after that. But the building itself, the prices of rent in Hong Kong were so high that we had people move into our floor. We had two apartments per floor. The one across from us, exactly the same. Everything was exactly the same. They're paying twice as much rent as us.
Ouch.
Because that's how much the market moved in that time.
Yes, yes. Because that's a big one, isn't it? If you are moving to a country that has a high expat contingent, it's likely that the rent will fluctuate greatly. Whereas if you're moving to a Germany or an Australia or a, you know, London, I think probably you can sort of work out prices of rent, just because there's plenty of people that are renting. You maybe won't be classed as an expat by what you're renting.
No, although, for sure.
Depending where international schooling is and et cetera, and if you're even going to use that. But yes, I know we had the opposite thing happen in Doha. When we arrived there, rent was horrendously expensive. And the house that we live in now, we couldn't have dreamed of renting, you know, 7 years ago.
Wow.
Because it was way out of our limit. Yeah. But the prices, you know, dropped dramatically because more and more things got built. The, you know, city just took off and, you know, things really kind of plateaued. You started to be able to strike deals. So the thing with the Middle East is they might say, okay, the price is going to be the same, but we're going to give you a free month rent a year. So you won't pay for January or you won't pay for March or whatever.
Right, so it's a phase thing. But they can show that they're charging this much rent, but what you're paying is actually different.
That's right. That's right. Or, you know, they'll pay for certain amenities or whatever. But yes, and I think, Nikki, I think I heard you were saying before, I think it's a very good tip that different parts of this, you know, that these sites will take into account the entire city. So things do plateau. And you really need to focus in on the areas that you're going to live in and really look specific to those areas when you're looking at food and schooling and rent and everything, because they may be dramatically different than if you're on the other side of town.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So I think that they're only a guide. And in these times when people can't visit a city and walk into a supermarket, I mean, that's one of my favourite things when you visit a new city is to find a supermarket and walk through it and see all the things that are there for sale, and then also look at the price of everything just to get an understanding of, you know, what does this cost versus what I'm used to paying. And I also think when you move to a new city, that's one of the things you do. Your cost of your food bill or your groceries is one of the first things that impacts you, because it's something that you do pretty regularly. And so it's just something that really is sort of front of mind in that situation. You know, the cost of meat, for example, in Germany is so much more expensive than the cost of meat in the US. And so we have less meat here, whereas the cost of meat in South Africa was like relatively cheap compared to Hong Kong. So we were like, oh my God, this is amazing. So it's really just a sort of thing where you walk and you go, wow. But then in the end, it kind of all washes out. By the time you've lived there a couple of years, you forget about how much things cost where you used to live, and you're just in your own lane, in your own place.
I still think one of the most fun things as an expat is if you've lived in one location, say like Libya, where you go to the butchers and, you know, there's a camel head hanging over the door and you can only buy meat at the butchers and you can only go to the little corner stop to get your groceries and you can only go to the vegetable guy to get your vegetables. You know, you're doing four different shops to get your four different things. And then someone says, oh, you're going to move to North America. And that first week when you're in North America and you walk into the local Safeway and there's like Cheese Whiz and hundreds of cans or bottles of it, and you're like, oh, my God, what is that stuff? And there's like broccoli and it's the middle of winter and there's snow outside and you think, how did they magically get this here? Like this because you've just come from another planet, you know, in some ways. But yes, it all, I'm with you in that it all washes out because you will never factor in everything because while you may say, oh, we're going to save buckets of cash because we're going to one place and it's going to be like this, you won't factor in that, you know, XYZ costs whatever, or that you're going to leave there every 6 to 8 weeks to get out of there to do something different, or your travel, or your whatever, or, you know, or your family situation. If you're going to have a baby, which is going to cost you either nothing, I think our baby bill at one place was 19 cents at one stage because it was so completely covered, or the baby bill is going to be enormous because you've got to fly somewhere to go and see an obstetrician because, you know, you're that remote. So who knows? Yeah, it is a tough gig to factor in everything when you really don't know.
Yeah, so all you can do is find some sites and have a look at relative comparisons and just get a feel. But and it's also what you spend your money on might not be what is in the basket. You know, like you might want to have the fastest internet available, which is gazillion times more expensive where you're moving compared to where you're moving from. You know, mobile phone bills and contracts are radically different by country. You know, all these things that you consider essential, you know, might not be considered essentials and or might not be in the basket that you're having a look at. Anyway, but it's a good one, Kirsty. It is something that people moving countries always consider.
Yes.
Kirsty, repatriation this year, what do you think will be different about it?
Oh, I think this is a really, really tough question because my initial response was that repatriation is going to be even more bittersweet than it usually is because, you know, there's the obvious stuff that you can't have the farewell parties and you won't have those proper goodbyes because you won't be able to see each other. That's the obvious. But I think within COVID there is this feeling though that there are a lot of expats who have decided that they want to return home because they've felt that pull from being away from their family. So there'll be a yes, I really want to go home. But then I think about all the Americans I know that don't want to go back because of COVID, do you know, and they're feeling really anxious about what's going on in their country. But I think, Nikki, I have to sort of spin this back to you because I was thinking about you. You're away from your family at the moment. You and I had this conversation weeks ago about, you know, do you decide to go home? And, you know, you were saying, well, no, you don't decide to go home because that would be more much uprooting your family. How do you feel about people with repatriation this year and what will be different?
I think the reasons for repatriation this year will be a lot different. So as you say, some will choose it because they think it's time, and then but a lot of other people will not. And it'll be forced and it'll be hard and it'll be quick. And that's a lot to process. Mm-hmm. That's a lot to really get your head around. And you'll spend all the time between when you find out you're doing it and when you're not, you know, just preparing and then going. Mm. So I suggest that, you know, you should really be kind to yourself and maybe think about what supports you might need. And then when you get to where you're going to, it's not like you can join a club and sort of just start playing sport and, you know, you know, join a book club and meet somewhere for wine or, you know, there is, well, except in South Australia, you can do all those things. But so if you repatriate into South Australia, excellent work. But other states in Australia are not so lucky, and lots of other places in the world aren't so lucky. So it's going to be much harder to settle, and we all know, so there has been a lot written and research done that repatriation is one of the toughest moves you ever make, whether it's an internal, external, overseas, etc. So going back to where you came from or where you started or is really, really tough anyway. So I just think it will be, you know, it will be tough. And I'm just really thinking of, as I see in the group and see all these posts about people repatriating and how quick and fast it is and how, you know, they're not having a choice or they're going to somewhere they don't really want to go back to, like you mentioned about the US. So I'm really feeling for everyone and thinking about if you were repatriating right now, that, you know, it can be pretty tough. And you know, apart from all the other things, you know, just the regular repatriation things.
Oh, look, regular repatriation is tough, but we're in a situation now where people are losing their jobs, and
yeah.
So I mean, I can only talk about this, say personally, Nikki, in that, you know, we found out there were going to be huge job cuts last week where my husband works. So those who have been long-time listeners of the podcast will know we went through, you know, 2 years of waiting to see what happened out of a merger where you were pretty sure you were out, then you were in, then you were out, then you were in, you know, and then you were eventually miraculously in. And so now it's like, oh, here we go again. Do you know, are we going to have a job, and then, you know, those rumors that come that, you know, everyone's going to get told on Monday or everyone's going to get told on Thursday. You've heard those ones, right? And then you wait, and then inevitably there's someone that you know that does lose their job, or you know, there's someone that you think, oh well, that's probably good for them, or that's probably disastrous for them. And the whole time you're thinking, well, how would we deal with this? And yeah, I agree with you in that this is going to be so confusing for many people, because repatriation is hard. Repatriation without a job is really, really hard. Repatriation without a job, going back to somewhere where there's a major recession, is going to be, you know, twice as hard, and then throw in COVID as well. So, yeah, it is the strangest time. I think the only thing that is remotely doable or would get you through is that you will definitely not be on your own. There's going to be so many of us in the same situation.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And people are also, and I mean, you know, we said before, obviously, they're not being able to say goodbye, and that's all very standard. Not standard, but that's what everyone's dealing with. So it is the same situation. But also people not being able to say goodbye to their school friends, or, you know, and they might not, and possibly when online sparkling learning started, that they didn't know that they were going to leave. So they saw their friends for the last time, and they didn't know at the time that's what it was. So that for lots of kids, that's really tough to go through that as well. And then if their parents are going through something that's stressful, like, you know, losing a job and all that kind of thing, I mean, that's a really tough family situation.
And there's going to be a lot of limbo, because you will have the limbo of we're leaving, and then the limbo of arriving back, but knowing of whether you're staying or going, because if you don't have a job, you're going to go where the work is. So you could plant yourself back in London, or, you know, Nairobi, or, you know, little old Adelaide, but you're still going to be looking for a job. And so, yeah, there's going to be a lot of people that are sort of sitting in limbo waiting to see how it's all going to pan out. And like you said, Nikki, it's hard to start up at a new school or join a new book group or, you know, enter into a world when you don't know if that's really what's happening with you, if you'll be staying there or not.
Yeah, very, very tough.
Okay, Nikki. Send my bag or parcels to go? I posed this question to the group because I was doing a bit of research on if you had something to send from A to B, which service would you recommend? I haven't had to do this for a while, but I had noticed in the group the old send my bag seems to be getting a lot of airplay at the moment. I'd heard someone had recommended Parcels to Go where someone else had gone, no, they've just lost my bag, don't do that. But I thought I'd have a chat to you about which ones you'd heard of, because this can be great for a couple of things like sending presents home and, you know, gifts and whatever, but also we'll have a lot of people at the moment that might have a container that's full or maybe not have a container and they want to send some stuff as well, or people on who go on holidays and they have a little bit of a shop up over the summer and then want to quickly send it back because there's no way it's going to fit into their suitcases. What are your tips for which ones you'd be using?
Well, Send My Bag obviously is the one that gets all the airplay, and I have looked into that as well when someone asked me a question about it. But one thing that did come up in the chat I did notice, and which is very, very true, is you have to worry about where you live. So in terms of when you receive it, because in the US, I was an online shopping master. And in the US, most things come from inside the US. So they all come to your door and you just sign for it, or they leave it at your door, and that's great. In Germany, something came to my door, an online parcel that I'd ordered from Australia. I ordered some dresses from a website and they arrived. And the guy at the door asked me for 75 euro. And and that was a tax related cost for the $300 dresses that I'd ordered. So, like, my parcels were $300 Australian dollars, and I had to pay 75 euros in tax.
How?
Yeah, which is nearly over $100. So, like, that's a big tax bill on top of whatever you've ordered. And what happens in Europe is that people get sent parcels and gifts for birthdays and babies and all this, and they end up at the tax office having to pay.
That's right. Look, I think I'd heard about this aggregation website called easyship.com where you can sort of see a detailed tax and duties and get the customs information, and then you can choose which one ships with the best courier rates. I would highly recommend to go and have a look at that. So it kind of groups them all together and then says this is what you're going to get slugged for customs or for tax for that. Someone else suggested the Seven Seas. I haven't used them before, but I went to their website and they look fine. Someone else said the Excess Baggage Company. We had someone that said, okay, if you're sending cash, use Western Union, that you only get stuff through Amazon at Aramex, and that everything else you use your friends, FedEx or DHL.
Fran, I don't know about cash and Western Union, but okay.
I think that's very much a Middle East thing. Western Union is huge in the Middle East. A Friday, you will see a lineup that goes down the street and around the corner, and a diverse lineup of different people that are all using Western Union. I know it's not something that enters my world that much at all, but I think if people want to send cash, they do it via Western Union. I sort of looked back through our advice on the website or on our Facebook group from other people that had asked, and Fran said the same thing as you about you just be aware of that tax bill. I think it was most countries, including the UK and the USA, offer a tax and duty-free allowance for returning residents or travellers and settlers who want to send unaccompanied baggage, etc., like things for clothing. I would go back to the old easyship.com and compare all of them and then make a decision.
Excellent. Good advice. I can't think where I'm going to be, where I'm going to have to do that in the near future. But
I did. Yeah, exactly. Because when none of us are going, because for me, it would be holiday. But Nikki, if you lived in Qatar, you'd be using those things all the time.
Right.
I promise you. So I think it really depends where you're living and what you have access to and what you don't. Yes. For me in my life, I'm not going to, because the only thing I could think about is, you know, this time last year I went on a fabulous holiday to Italy where the only thing that stopped me from buying things was I was trying to travel light, you know, and so it was like, oh, I'd love to buy that, but there's no way I'm going to fit all of this in my suitcase. But I could see that you could go, oh, well, maybe I'll just, you know, get a little suitcase and send it off to, you know, with send my bag.
It's a future tip for yourself. Excellent.
Yes.
I'm sure your husband will be thrilled that we talked that through on the podcast. Okay, Kezie, last week we talked about funerals and we actually had some lovely feedback on that in the Facebook group. But what about significant birthdays in COVID? So in the past when people have had significant birthdays in their expat life, they've been able to do some amazing things, some people. So, you know, have a really extravagant trip or have parties in more than one place. 2 years ago we went to a 50th party in London, but that was just one of five locations that he was having a 50th that year. You know, friends or family meeting for a special holiday, bye-bye Greek villa that I was meant to be going to next week with our Australian family members. So what is the best way that people can celebrate and involve everybody in your life, expat or not? You know, asking for a friend.
So, Nikki Moffat, you have a big, big birthday in a couple of weeks. So for those that don't know, Nikki Moffat will be turning the big fat 5-0 in a couple of weeks, and she was going to be going to a Greek villa and meeting up with her Australian family, but they've all backed out because they're all too scared.
And they can't get out of the country.
I did see that Greece is having an onslaught of tourism at the moment. If you believe the ABC News this morning, they were showing that Greece is allowing people to fly back in and that people are doing so. But anyway, Nikki, I think this is more a question for you, because obviously in my life right now, I'm sitting in Australia with a husband going through chemo, radio, etc. We're not going anywhere. So we're not having any super extravagant trips or parties or anything unless we go to the supermarket. But what about you? What do you think? How can people celebrate? What are you going to do? Are you going to postpone it or are you going to reinvent?
No, I'm totally postponing. I you know, it's so frustrating because my sister-in-law is also turning 50. She and I are 2 weeks apart. And where she lives in Australia, after the 10th of July, she can have up to 50 people in her home. And where I am right now, where we are in Germany, is that if I lived in Berlin, I could have up to 100 people at a private event. And if I lived in Bremen, which is an hour the other way, I could have 25 people at a private event. But because I live in Hamburg, I can have 0 people at a private event, which makes me giggle, because I tried to get a doctor's appointment for my husband on Friday, short notice, just a script thing. And the doctor called me back and she said, I'd really love to help you, but I just want to let you know that my son is turning 30 this weekend and we're having a very big party for him at our house. And it's also my birthday. And so we're having another family gathering for, and I was thinking, lady, you shouldn't be telling me this. Look, I don't know. Look, I think really, honestly, the best thing that people can do. So in the Facebook group, we have had some lovely suggestions for keepsakes, because another thing about being an expat, Kirstie, and you would know this, is that when you had your birthday party, is that you're never going to have all the people you want in the same room at the same time. That's never going to happen because people live in different countries. And even if there was no COVID, there would be no you know, I would be, you know, we would be with family in Greece, and that would be lovely. Like, yeah. That would be really lovely. Yeah. And that was what we planned to do. So I think the thing is, there are lovely things to do if you're having a birthday. And one of them is like the book. I made a book for my husband. So what I did was I contacted people from all around the world, from every country we'd lived in, from people that he went to school with, people that we went to university with, and you know, people at his workplace in different countries as well. And so I contacted them, I started contacting them maybe 3 months before his birthday. And in the end, I was aiming for 50 contributions because I thought that was a good number. And we lived in 5 countries. Mm. And I ended up with a bit more, so maybe 60, I think. And people sent in little stories and pictures. The website I went to puts together all the stuff, all the book for you, and you can pay different amounts if you want them to help you edit it or if you want to do all your own editing. And, you know, it's a really lovely record of his life. And it's not only his expat life. It's you know, we lived in Australia for the first 30 years of his life, so it's all that as well. So it incorporates everything before and everything now, which, and I just thought it's a lovely thing to have, but it's not something you can do at very short notice. Yeah. You need to sort of plan for that one.
That's a really good one.
That is a really good one. I think for now, you know, videos, whatever, like I would be super happy if I got a video and of TikToks from around the world that are for my friends making TikToks. You know, like, and that is not a hint. No one start doing that. But what I mean is, like, it's just nice to have something to remember that there are all these people in your life. And, you know, you don't need everyone to call you. I love birthdays, but I like other people's birthdays more than mine. But I just think it's nice. And it is a way that everyone, you know, can be involved. If, you know, someone showed me a video the other day that they'd made for their brother who was in quarantine for a birthday of his. And they, you know, one of the videos had been like a time lapse. So it was all one family making a big happy birthday sign and holding it up. And then another video had been something else, and another video had been something else. And then this person just got them all in and just edited them and put a little bit of music and whatever. And then, and it was just a really nice thing and a really nice way for him to remember this year's birthday forever. And also, you know, it's just a fun thing. And it doesn't, you know, and look, it doesn't matter. I mean, send flowers and champagne. Very happy with that.
I think I like what you said before about just to postpone it, because you're not going to get what you initially wanted. So why do something that isn't what you initially wanted and then be, you know, slightly disappointed that it wasn't? And I think if you just go, okay, we're not doing it now, we're going to do it in 6 months or 12 months or whatever, you just give yourself a bit of extra time for planning, and you get another year of being 50, because you'll just be 50 when you do it. So instead of being 51, it's still going to be your 50th. And this is just me. Maybe other people are really great at moving on the fly and going, all right, you know, pivot, I'm going to change, I'm going to do something different. But I think for me, if I had something in my mind that I wanted to do, I would just quite happily postpone it. And I'm a bit like you. I do love other people's birthdays, not so much my own, because I think too, we realize that there comes a lot of organizing and planning and expectations, and you'll be the one passing around the hors d'oeuvres probably. So it's much more fun to go to someone else's. All right, Nikki, you know what we can do? We can put that website up in the show notes when you find it.
Excellent.
of what you did for Sam. Now tell me, if you do something like that for your partner, is Sam sitting at home going, oh, gosh, I've got to do a book for Nikki now because she did a book for me? Or are all the same people going to be in the book?
Well, here's the thing. So, no, he's not going to do a book for me, pretty sure about that. Pretty sure he hasn't started it, and too late now. So, but I think that it wouldn't be all the same people, but it would be a lot of the same people, maybe. I don't know. Who knows what he's thinking? It's hard to say, Kirsty. perhaps we should get him in. But I don't think so. But I think a book is a lovely idea, and it's all because so can be like a farewell gift when you move somewhere, or you know, from your when you're leaving a country, or you know, for your kids or something like that. So I just the book itself is a lovely idea, and depends how you can use it for lots of different ways. But yeah, no idea. I'll tell you in a couple of weeks what he's thinking.
Okay, Nikki. Three favorite things. What have you got?
Okay, three favorite things. All right, Kessie, this week in my, you know, I don't want to let the people down by not sort of mentioning some sort of trash TV because I think that that's important. I think there's a demographic that likes my trash TV recommendations. It doesn't always have to be highfalutin thinking process. I watched this week Space Force. Now, Space Force is on Netflix. It stars Steve Carell, Lisa Kudrow, John Malkovich. It's actually the cast is amazing, and it had mixed reviews. And so I'd seen it pop up, and I was thinking, oh, you know, maybe one day I'll watch an episode of that. And then I saw a review popped up, and I read it, and it, you know, it talked about how some people really liked it, how some people didn't, how some people thought it was a flop. Whatever, and I thought, oh, well, I'll give it a go. Anyway, it's a total giggle. It really, it's just a very, you know, because this in the last 2 years, the US has formed a new division of their armed services called Space Force. So it's all about that particular situation happening, and Steve Carell is the general in charge of Space Force. And, you know, he's just pretty good. And everything he does, he's pretty good at it. So I just really enjoyed him in that role. And the whole thing, it's all absurd. And John Malkovich is the chief scientist. So there's the, you know, the push and pull between the science and the, you know, the sort of military side of it. And, you know, it's just funny. It's a giggle. And it covers a lot of things that, you know, that have been in the mainstream over the last few years, and it just puts a really funny spin on them.
And you're right, it has had really mixed reviews. My son watched it and was raving about
it to me, my youngest.
And he loved it, like thought it was really good. And then I watched the ABC, you know, review show, and they canned it, like completely canned it. And I thought, oh, anyway, then about 2 days later, I saw them interviewing the review guy saying, you know, I hope you're feeling sheepish because other people, you know, it's number one and it's getting great reviews from the people that are watching it, you know, that it's not necessarily getting great reviews from reviewers, yes, but the general public are loving it. So, yeah, I'll have to watch it as well.
I think the thing is for Space Force is that it's got a lot of US political jokes. So if you haven't followed US politics, it's probably there's some things you might miss, but it's really good. Okay, a new book, all my walking lets me really expand my book repertoire.
I know there's some days you're doing two walks in one day. The other day I saw you walked on water.
I don't know what Strava was doing, but I did two laps. And the first lap I did sort of a twirly thing, and the second lap I did a straight line down the side, but then it looked like I walked on water, and I said, I don't really know what happened there. I did not walk over the water. Anyway, I'm listening to a new book called Between the World and Me, Ta-Nehisi Coates. And it is a book written, he is an activist in the US. He's part of the Black Lives Matter movement and just in general. The book is a letter, I'm in the first half, but it's a letter really from him to his son about being black and how he grew up and what he had to do and how he had to do it and how his son is living through that but in a totally different way. And it's honestly – and it's read by him. So it is difficult to listen to sometimes because there is a lot. And you think that, you know, kids grow up like that and that's all the things they're dealing with when they grow up in difficult neighborhoods and difficult parts where, you know, gangs are a thing. And, you know, there was one part I was listening to yesterday where he said, you know, when someone says, shorty, show us your bike, what bike you got there, they're not doing it because they want to see your bike, you know, like, and if they say, you know, I heard you mess with my cousin, that's not what they're meaning. You know, that means something totally else. So there's all these things and all this sort of language. And then he talked about how there was, you know, a third of his mind was about getting to school and back alive. And then a third of his mind was about how school was and how school treated him, but how school was could be sometimes the only out, but then it was all designed in a way to not necessarily generate that outcome. And goodness, it is really worthwhile for me sort of reading and listening to, because it's a very powerful thing. I think it's a very powerful memoir of his time growing up. And then the other thing was, of course, that's an American-based thing, so I wanted to find something more about Australia, because, you know, the whole point of this protest movement is to, obviously it started in the States, but, you know, when they had protests in Australia, it wasn't necessarily about the States.
Yeah.
It was about what actually happens in Australia and how
yes.
our Indigenous people have been treated over the years, and also immigrants and everybody who's not a white Australian.
Yes.
And so I thought, I have a friend who has worked in that area before, and so she posted something on Facebook which was 10 things you should know about slavery. So I know there was a big thing in Australia this week where one of our politicians had said there wasn't slavery in Australia, and then there was a bit of a backlash on that. And so she posted an article or a link to a website, 10 things you should know about slavery from SBS, and it just ran through some articles and some short documentaries and things about the history of that in Australia, which I found quite sobering, not stuff I learned at school necessarily. And I thought it was interesting because I think it's important for me to know about Australia and for me to know about my country, my passport country, my country of birth, and then how things I don't know about the history. So
yeah,
that was my third thing.
Yes, it's an amazing thing, isn't it, Nikki, that when we're at school we learn things and we go back and tell our parents and we think that our parents are so ignorant because they didn't learn those things at school and we did. And now our own children are looking at us in the same way of, you know, when I look at Australian history, when I was in year 12 and I did year 12 Australian history, I can still remember there was a lot of stuff my dad saying, oh, we just didn't learn this in school. Do you know, and then you gain some understanding of why a generation can be uneducated. And now, you know, it's horrifying that you think, well, I don't think, Nikki, you and I in our time got told even a quarter of the story. So, yeah,
that's how it makes it structural.
Yeah, that's
because everyone's just going through the same thing. And it's not a deliberate act on our behalf as children that we're not learning it.
Yes.
But we become part of the system that reinforces it in a way.
Yeah.
Because we never learned it.
Yes. Now, Nikki, I've only got a couple of things, neither of which are cultural or great shares to give to anyone, but they are what has consumed me and they are my favourite things this week. Number one, we talked about this last week, that footy is back. And oh my gosh, it was so good. It was so good. But it was just lovely. I'm not going to bore everyone with my team's amazing showdown win in Adelaide, but there was something incredible that happened. And that
was. Is it called shellacking?
It was a shellacking. It was a total shellacking. It was so good. But what was wonderful was we were allowed to have 2,000 people at the football, and so they chose 1,500 people from my team and 500 from the other because it was our home game. And just the beauty of them honing in on people's faces, both sides of the party, but just these people who really had in their mind won the golden ticket because they did it by ballot. And there were all those lovely things that happened where board members gave up tickets to give give them to the general public. And, you know, all those good stories that you see in these times of community. And it was just wonderful, 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 wonderful. Anyway, it was just lovely because, of course, everything else in my world changes in that way, in that all the footy podcasts that I listen to and the footy things that I, television shows that I watch and whatever, they're now back to talking about football rather than debating ridiculous, you know, things. We now don't have to go back and watch the 97 grand final again. We don't have to, you know, return to that. We now all have things that we can talk about. So that is lovely. And the second massive piece of joy in my life this week, and it's very much my favourite thing, is an 8-week-old little black labradoodle whose name is Buddy. And we have now become a 2-dog family at our house. So, of course, we have Roxy the Beagle in Qatar, who is 16 years old. And when we had to make our, you know, quick departure from Qatar for my husband to come back here for treatment, there was this whole conversation about what would be the best thing to do with Roxy when we got here, because, you know, the plan is that we will return in October and that, you know, life will continue on as it is. And there was a lot of thought about bringing Roxy back to Australia, but then what do you do when you then have to go back in October? Like, what do you do with her? And she's 16. Anyway, she is unfit for travel and can't make the ride, you know, the ride. So we're doing these weekly little video calls with Roxy where we all talk into the phone. Anyway, without going into too much detail, my youngest, you know, it's been a tough transition back here, and without sort of knowing what his world looks like, there was conversation about, you know, do we get a puppy and what would that look like here? And, of course, I now have 4 children in this country. So when you've got your 4 children all saying, yes, 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 we can get a puppy, because, of course, with children, everybody's going to feed it, everybody's going to walk it, everybody's going to look after it, everybody's going to be so hands-on. Anyway, I do have my 2 eldest, well, my eldest is in a unit in town. My second daughter will be joining her in January. So we sort of thought, okay, we could do a puppy here that floated between beach and unit. So after lots of, searching and conversations and whatever, we found Buddy the Labradoodle, who we picked up only yesterday, and it's been so exciting. Like, we have been counting down the sleeps of, you know, 10 more sleeps, 9 more sleeps, 8 more sleeps. And Buddy came home yesterday, and bizarrely, Nikki, my Buddy looks exactly like your Labradoodle that you had in Atlanta.
He does. It was his little white chest and his little white chin. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Just so gorgeous. And I was just scrolling through Instagram yesterday mindlessly, and I saw on your daughter's Insta stories a Labradoodle puppy in your house. And I was like, I can't believe you have. And I sent it to you immediately. I was like, what? The dog is there? And because I know that we'd been banned, there was an embargo on talking about it because, you know, we didn't want anything to go wrong.
I was so worried it wasn't going to happen. Yeah.
So, and I was thinking, oh my goodness, the dog is there. And he looks absolutely gorgeous. And the photos you sent were all taken within a 24-hour period then.
Yeah, it is. It's a funny thing with dogs. So there's this guy who walks past every day, and I talk to him every day. And I really like him. And we always have very similar conversations, and we talk about the dog, and he's young. And I had, I guess in my mind, thought, I'm thinking that you might be on the spectrum, because this boy had sort of always concentrates very much to ask me all the right things and look engaged in the conversation and how are you, and, you know, this is what, you know, giving me really almost like someone who's been trained, this is what you say when you're having a conversation.
Have a conversation. Yep.
Yeah. And so he has become a friend, and he really has become a great friend because we see each other daily and we talk about the dog and we do whatever. Anyway, I met his mother for the first time a couple of days ago. She wandered by with the dog, and I said, I know you and, you know, this is Ada and whatever. And she said, I think you might be friends with my son. And she said, we're going to have a 30th birthday party for him, and we thought we'd just invite all the basically random people that he speaks to in the neighbourhood. And I said, that's me.
I'm in.
Yes, I'm in, and I really, really want to come. But she said to me, we got Ada, who's also a Labradoodle, we got Ada sort of as a therapy dog for him. And she said, you know, that we went to the people and we said, you know, we can't have a dog that kind of jumps up on people or is loud and whatever. We needed like a nice, calm, sort of soothing dog. And the people said, I know exactly the litter to get it from. I will pick the dog, you know, and that's exactly what they got. And in a way for us, I'm going to try really hard not to get too emotional, but I think for us as a family, this is very much, Buddy's a bit of a therapy dog for a few of us as well, in that when you've got a puppy, yes, it's a nightmare in that the, you know, trying to get them to sleep at night and feed them and picking up, you know, wiping up pee off the ground and whatever. But there has been, I don't know if you saw it on the Insta stories, but there's been a lot of cuddles and a lot of love and a lot of giggles. And yeah, it definitely has been a wonderful thing for us, although we all do feel like we're cheating on Roxy and we're not quite sure we're going to break the news to her just yet that we've got another dog, but we're hoping she'll understand.
Oh, that is a lovely, lovely story to hear, and it's a lovely thing to end on for this week, Kirsty Rice.
Yes.
Lovely to talk to you.
So good to talk to you too. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.